Now, for years, I have been saying, why not use the War Games concept at Survivor Series? It makes sense, just in terms of the names. War Games at Survivor Series. You don't need a series of elimination matches anymore. Once a year, you feature a 5-on-5, double ring, double cage War Games match. Nobody's ever seen anything like that in WWE. The Elimination Chamber is a poor man's War Games. I think that concept would sell. As far as what the teams would be, you know, if they had built this Nexus thing up a little bit better, it would have made perfect sense to do Team WWE against Nexus in a War Games match at Survivor Series instead of doing what they did at SummerSlam, but that's neither here nor there. The fact is, I would make War Games the new annual Survivor Series tradition. I think that would work out quite well.
It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered by all.
You like fighting a woman?
You're saying Vince McMahon is stupid. Is that what you're saying?
Oh my God, we're only an hour in.
Eric Bischoff is an idiot.
We have 2 more hours of this.
Maybe the single stupidest idiot that ever got into wrestling.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce?
Come over here and threaten me.
I'm the Solo Monster, damn it. Welcome to episode 775 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, September 25th, 2022. Shana Tova to all of our Jewish friends celebrating the new year tonight. Man, I was at 2 wrestling events this week. I can't remember the last time I was at 2 different shows in the same week. Felt good. It's been too long. Before we even get going here, I want to shout out all of our PayPal producers. All the great men and women who support this show every single week, starting with the Portland pop star Paul Hamilton, Night Stalker Nayef Alsafar, Big B Brian Pissera, Killshot Keith Hart, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, The Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep, John Raging Mad Riffle, New York Punk Arnold Modesto, Recon Russell Bulware, Shin Superkick Akuma, the Iowan Corn Farmer Jesse Lampier. Happy birthday to Chris from Bethlehem. My Vince voice is in the shop, so I can't do it right now. But Chris is celebrating 37 years on this earth today, so happy birthday to him. And shout out to Alvin Peoples from the People's Choice podcast. He is approaching the 2-year anniversary of his show. He has been a fan of the Sound Off since 2014 and has listened to people like me and Chris Van Vliet, which inspired him to start a podcast. It's not a wrestling show, but he has had the chance to interview some very cool people over the years. So congrats to Alvin on the milestone. Just go to YouTube and search for the People's Choice Podcast. And it should be, if not the first, one of the first things that pops up for you. I mentioned being at 2 wrestling events this week. If you missed the House of Glory Genesis show last night, you can buy the replay on Fight TV. It was a really strong show with a tremendous main event. The first ever ladder match in House of Glory history between Charles Mason and Ken Broadway for the Crown Jewel Championship with a shocking finish. Those two went out there. They had an absolute war. Myself and JD from New York, along with Dr. Hillary P. Wisdom. Can't leave out the good doctor. We got to call our first ever ladder match. Hopefully we did it justice. Violet is the new House of Glory Women's Champion. Low-Key and Penta L0M, they had a hell of a battle. The Briscoes retained their House of Glory tag team titles over the Dark Order, Evil Uno and Stu Grayson. They will hit the 200-day mark now as the tag team champions this week. And maybe the sleeper match of the night on that undercard, main event beating Milk Chocolate. This was Milk Chocolate's hog debut. Years ago on the Sound Off, I interviewed an independent wrestler by the name of Brandon Watts, who had just broken his neck in a match for Beyond Wrestling. 21 years old at the time, didn't know what that recovery was going to look like. But he's put that behind him, and as I told the promoter after, we definitely need to get them back. So if you have not seen Milk Chocolate before, check out this match they had with Main Event last night. The next show is Saturday, October 29th. It will not be at the NYC Arena, so stay tuned for the location. Shout out to Jose Pagan and AJ and all of the other listeners who stopped by to say hello last night. Always love seeing you guys. So I'm not wasting any time here. Let's get right into it. We got a lot of news to cover here, and then I got to get the hell out of here. I got to hit the road and be somewhere. It was exactly 12 years ago today, September 25th, 2010, that I recorded Sound Off episode 127, where I gave my business plan for WWE. All of the roster moves I would make, who I would want to sign from other promotions and off the indies, and what my pay-per-view schedule would look like, the names I would use, you know, having 3 to 4 different developmental territories like OVW instead of just one, television plans, the website, the Hall of Fame, the wellness policy. I mean, I went into all of it. One of the ideas that I pitched on that episode, and it wasn't the first time, I had pitched it many times before, was revamping the Survivor Series. Survivor Series was always fun when I was a kid, and it was still the Thanksgiving tradition. Then it became the Thanksgiving Eve tradition, and then it was no longer really much of a tradition. But yeah, you had the teams of 5 or more facing off in elimination format. Yeah, on that very first Survivor Series show, they had a 20-man match. It was 10-on-10 with all tag teams. Vince McMahon only created the Survivor Series as a way to fuck with Jim Crockett Promotions, which started airing, or was about to start airing, Starrcade on pay-per-view for the very first time that night. And Crockett countered by moving Starrcade to the late afternoon. That way the cable companies could offer both shows as a package deal, right? And that way everybody wins. Well, that's not what Vince McMahon wanted. He didn't want everybody to win. He wanted to win. And fuck everybody else. So he threatened the cable providers by telling them that if they carried Starrcade, they would not be allowed to carry WrestleMania 4. And WrestleMania 3 had been a huge success earlier that year. So he was, you know, kind of hanging that over their head and said, if you want WrestleMania next year, you can't carry their show. And so all but maybe 4 or 5 cable companies, they pulled the plug on Starrcade and they got crushed that night, which is why Starrcade got moved to December the very next year. There have been lots of memorable Survivor Series moments over the years. You know, this year is going to be the 25th anniversary of the Montreal Screwjob. They killed off the invasion angle in 2001. They had Team WWF go over. The next year, they introduced the first ever Elimination Chamber match at Madison Square Garden. And so for years, Survivor Series just kind of lingered and they would do the elimination matches. And then the buy rate for the show took a nosedive in 2009. And 12 years ago, on one of those investor conference calls, Vince McMahon announced that the Survivor Series was being discontinued. He said, "We think that the Survivor Series is obsolete as far as that title is concerned. It was something that worked many, many years ago in terms of a creative standpoint, various teams competing. That really is not advantageous as the consumer now looks at what they actually are buying." As opposed to all those years before that, I guess, when people wore a blindfold and they just randomly pushed buttons when they were ready to buy their pay-per-views. I'm not even sure what that means. But that was in February of 2010 that he said that. By June, they changed their mind. They got some backlash to the decision. They changed their mind and Survivor Series was reinstated, as it should have been. It never should have been discontinued to begin with. All they needed to do was make changes. There was never any reason to cancel the Survivor Series. All it needed was a facelift. And on that podcast in 2010, I pitched the idea of bringing War Games to Survivor Series. You bring those two names together, it just made too much sense to me. It made so much sense, and it would have been the perfect way to freshen up an outdated format. If you don't think that the elimination matches sell anymore, well, then try something different. Well, why not try this concept? It's not a surprise that the Survivor Series buy rate dipped so much, you know, that they wanted to get rid of it. We get tag team matches all the time on TV. Sometimes 4-on-4, 5-on-5, 6-on-6. That format didn't feel as special as it used to. And WWE was not exactly putting maximum effort into making the show feel special. It was a distant number 4 on that list of the so-called Big Four pay-per-views. Junking the elimination concept and bringing War Games would breathe new life into the show. Triple H had pitched the idea to Vince McMahon on bringing back War Games and he resisted. It wasn't his idea. It wasn't his creation. The Elimination Chamber was a poor man's War Games, but at least it was his. It was something they could take credit for creating. I will never understand how they had the chance to use the concept and they let it sit dormant for so many years until they lost the rights to use it. But that's exactly what happened. MLW did a War Games match in 2003. Years later, when Court Bauer relaunched the promotion, they filed to trademark the name since WWE had no ownership over it. And MLW did another War Games match many years later. So Triple H, finally, he figured, well, if they're not going to use it on the main roster, if Vince doesn't want to use it, I'll use it. I'll use it for NXT. But then he realized that MLW owned the name. So they worked out a deal to acquire the trademark, and War Games became the new annual NXT tradition in 2017. That all came to an end this week with the announcement that Triple H is bringing War Games to Survivor Series at long last. There will be a men's War Games match and a women's War Games match, just like they did in NXT. I mean, we have two Royal Rumble matches, we have two Money in the Bank matches, so you knew there would be two War Games matches. Even better, he said it will not be Raw versus SmackDown, which was such a ridiculous concept the last few years because of the timing of the draft. You would shake up the rosters 6 weeks before the pay-per-view, and then they would all have to wear the red shirts and the blue shirts, and they would have to pretend like they would take a fucking bullet for their brand. Give me a break. And they would bill it as the one time a year we get to see the stars of Raw competing against the stars from SmackDown, which is something we see every fucking week on television. It was stupid. And it should have been done away with years ago. In an interview with The Ringer, this is what Triple H had to say. The tradition of Survivor Series has ebbed and flowed and changed slightly over time, but this will be similar to that. This will not be Raw versus SmackDown. It will be much more storyline-driven. I still look at it as a traditional component to Survivor Series, and there because it's large teams of people competing. We just upped the ante a little bit with War Games and made it evolve. Now, he's saying the War Games matches will not be Raw versus SmackDown. That would seem to leave the door open for other Raw versus SmackDown matches on the undercard. But the focus is not going to be blue brand against red brand anymore, which is a great move on his part. We got the announcements of the return of War Games and the return of the Fight Pit match all on the same day this week. I'll talk about the Fight Pit match later. Less than a week before that, I was on the NXT Year in Review Roundtable for Post Wrestling, and I said that I would like to see Triple H revive the Fight Pit concept. If not for NXT, then for the main roster. And here we are. So this has been a happy week for me. But if it wasn't already obvious with the moves that he's made and the people that he's brought back that this is Triple H's show now and not Vince McMahon's show, the fact that he is bringing War Games to the main roster is all the proof that you need. He told The Ringer, one of the things that Vince used to always say is that if you put yourself in the seats, you can never go wrong. Now all fans have different points of view. All you got to do is go online and you'll see every single person has a different point of view. And they're happy to express it. But I think if you go out there and you think, what would you want to see? If you're a fan and you just love what we do, what would you want to see? Vince McMahon did not want what the fans wanted. He wanted what he wanted. He was a stubborn old man who made money in spite of himself. It's about time that we have somebody running the show who can actually see things from a fan's perspective. Triple H grew up a fan of the wrestling business. He grew up a fan of the War Games matches. Vince McMahon got into it because of his father. He wanted to be anything but a wrestling promoter, it seemed, going all the way back to the Evil Knievel Snake River Canyon jump that he promoted, to the Bodybuilding Federation, to the Football League. Triple H is an old school guy. He watched those old War Games matches, even in the interview. He talked about how frustrating it was when he was younger to see how low those cage ceilings were, like when Brian Pillman got hurt taking that powerbomb from Sid Vicious. That's one of the reasons why they did away with the roof to the cage in NXT. And these War Games matches won't have a roof either. That, and they want people to be able to do dives off the top of the cage, because everybody dives. They also allow pinfalls in NXT, which I'm guessing these will too. But traditionally, it was submission or surrender rules. Once all 10 men were called into the ring, you have the cage over the two rings. One man starts from each team, and then 5 minutes later, somebody new enters based on a coin flip, usually a heel, because that way you can set up for the babyface comeback. And then every 2 minutes, they switch off, and somebody new enters from each team until they're all in, there's nobody left, and only then does it become the match beyond. And now you can try to win the match. Or survive. You don't win war games. You survive war games, as Dustin Rhodes once said. Another reason why doing this on a show called Survivor Series makes all the sense in the world. NXT had some good war games matches. All but one of them involved the Undisputed Era. The only one that didn't was the last one they did, which was Team Black and Gold against Team 2.0, which I still think is the best match of the 2.0 era. But War Games was not meant to be held in front of 200 people at the Performance Center. War Games was not meant to be held in an empty building with a Thunderdome screen. It deserves a bigger platform than that. The original ones with the Four Horsemen and the Road Warriors and Dusty Rhodes, it was Dusty's creation. Those matches are iconic. Sting's Squadron against Paul Heyman's Dangerous Alliance in 1992 is the greatest War Games match I've ever seen. AEW has done a couple of Blood and Guts matches so far, which is their version of War Games. Two rings, one cage. They're bloody, they're violent, and with the right story and the right people involved, they can create great drama. Which is why the timing of this could not be any better with the Bloodline story going on. And I know it's early yet to start fantasy booking these matches, but I would think that you would have damage control on one side of the women's match with two other people, maybe Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler. I'm holding out hope maybe they get them together on TV in more of a tweener or a heel role coming out of Extreme Rules. So let's say you have them on one side against Becky Lynch, who should be just about all healed up and ready to come back any week now. Get Becky and Ronda on opposite sides of a War Games match. Becky, Bianca, Liv Morgan, Asuka, and Raquel. The men's match, I mean, how do you not have the Bloodline on one side? Roman Reigns, the Usos, Solo Sikoa, and Sami Zayn, the honorary Us, against Seth Rollins, Matt Riddle. Yes, Rollins and Riddle may be forced to team up with Drew McIntyre, Kevin Owens, and maybe, you know, whatever the other name is. I could see them having Logan Paul in that match. He can be in the spot that Pat McAfee was in when he did that one War Games match in NXT, doing some wacky splash off the top of the cage. Or you could have Sheamus in there, Sheamus and Drew on the same team. I might save the Brawling Brutes for a match with Imperium. So maybe you put Braun Strowman in that spot. Whoever it is. Lots of options for who that fifth man could be on the babyface side. But whoever it is, the story is about Sami Zayn likely losing the match for the Bloodline. Doing something that screws the Bloodline out of a win in that match. All without Roman Reigns having to take a pinfall or a submission loss. So we don't have to worry about that. Now they could do 4-on-4 with the Bloodline having already turned on Sami and then have Zayn and Owens and Drew and a fourth man on the babyface side. But what a waste that would be to not extend it out at least to Survivor Series. You know, War Games could be a big turning point, should be a big turning point in that storyline. And the Bloodline kicking Sami out of the group, not unlike how Larry Zbyszko accidentally hit Bobby Eaton with the metal turnbuckle rod in that War Games match from 92, cost the Dangerous Alliance the match and led to Larry being kicked out of the group, and that was the beginning of the end of the Dangerous Alliance. That's why I'm excited when I hear Triple H talk about these matches being more story-driven. The storyline potential in that men's match is huge if they do it right. Now, blood was a big part of those early War Games matches, but unless somebody gets split open hard way, it doesn't look like that's going to be a part of these. Triple H said, "The world has changed. The world has evolved. I don't think it's necessary. There is still blood in WWE, but there are medical personnel to check on wrestlers if there is an inadvertent cut. If we have talent that gets cut, usually you'll see them roll out and they'll get looked at to make sure there's nothing dangerous. I'm just of the opinion right now, given the state of the world and the pandemic, and at the end of the day, what we do is dangerous enough without intentionally making it more dangerous. Yes, we did feature blood for a long period of time, but we have changed that practice, and it is irresponsible to go back." Now, of course, he has to say that because he's an executive in the company, and he is not going to come out and give an interview to The Ringer or any other magazine or television outlet or newspaper or online website and say, yes, we have our performers slicing their foreheads open. Okay, so he's not going to come out and say that. That's exactly the kind of corporate statement that I would expect. And I don't have any issue with them cutting down on blood and doing more to protect their talent. And he's right. You know, safety first. You've got, you know, it is a different time, the pandemic and all that he mentioned. All those things are true. I believe when the situation calls for it, there is absolutely nothing wrong with getting some color in a match. It should not be overdone like they do in AEW, where they overdo it to the point of absurdity. But if they were ever going to allow some blood, War Games is the time to do it. It adds to the drama. So I don't have any issue with them featuring some blood in the War Games match. At least in one of them. But for the first time in a very long time, I am excited for Survivor Series. And if they don't want to use William Regal's old voice to make the announcement because nobody said it like he did, then I think it would be appropriate when the time comes for Triple H, given that he's the one who brought it back, to be the one to walk out on television and declare War Games. I can't wait. War Games is not the only thing Triple H is bringing back. He's also brought Gabe Sapolsky back to the company, according to PW Insider. Gabe is the latest member of Triple H's inner circle that was let go to be brought back. First it was Road Dogg, then it was Ryan Katz, and now it's Sapolsky, who will be working on creative. We just don't know if that's main roster creative or NXT creative, which is where he was working before. Last week, I mentioned the off-air segment from SmackDown where they played the vocals to the 1967 song White Rabbit by Jefferson Airplane. It was very random. It was very haunting, which is why I liked it. Then a red light came on in the arena, very much like we used to see with The Fiend. I mean, they've done it with other people too. Kane. But yeah, the last time we saw that red light being used in that way was for The Fiend. And then it was over. And the show continued as if nothing had happened. They did the same thing at live events in Bakersfield and Oakland. And then again off air at Raw on Monday and SmackDown this week. Everyone in the crowd holds their phones up like fireflies while the music plays. This is clearly building to a Bray Wyatt return. There can be no doubt about that after the latest clue that dropped on Friday night. Karrion Kross used to play a character, yes, he did, the White Rabbit King on Lucha Underground. He was the leader of the White Rabbit tribe, right? Paul London did too, by the way. Paul London was part of that whole thing. But why would WWE play off of a story or a character from Lucha Underground? Ask yourself that question. It doesn't make any sense. The answer is no, they wouldn't. And Kross is already involved in a program with Drew McIntyre anyway. There is an hourglass on screen with some of these videos they've been showing us, but it's not Karrion Kross. They have been dropping little Easter eggs and clues left and right for us. What they have done, I think, is really clever. They have forced us to pay attention to every segment on these shows because you never know when you might get another clue or another QR code. Austin Theory was in the back on Monday night getting ready for his match, and there, right behind him, was a sticker with a QR code on it. And then in the second hour of the show, there was a guy in the crowd holding up a sign with that same QR code. When you scan the code, it brings you to a WWE.com landing page with video of an animated white rabbit playing a game of Hangman with the clue, "Who killed the world?" And the answer is, "You did." Bray did used to sing, "He's got the whole world in his hands." Other people have also picked up on the fact that the font that was used, the font type that was used in that video is identical to the same font that was used on Fiend merchandise, you know, a few years ago. So there's a lot of little clues when you put everything together like this. There was another clue that said, "Come with me." And the video then transitions to a screen with the numbers 923 on it in date format, and then it switches back and forth between date and time format. So it says 923 is in the date, you know, September 23rd, but then it says 9:23 as in 9:23 p.m. September 23rd was Friday. 9:23 p.m. just so happened to be right in the middle of SmackDown. Now, I figured that was when we were going to get our next clue, because why give the actual reveal on a random episode of SmackDown? Why give that away? What I loved about this is that it was exactly 9:23 p.m. on Monday when that person in the crowd held up the sign with the QR code on it. At 9:23 p.m. on Friday, nothing happened on the show. I mean, they may have played the White Rabbit song off the air for the people in the building at 9:23, but instead we had a commercial on TV. But they did drop a new video online earlier that night of a White Rabbit going through what looked like a Pac-Man maze, trying to escape fire and flames, and then it ended up hopping through an open door. Now, in Bray's Twitter, if you go to, Wyndham, I guess, if you go to Wyndham's Twitter account, in his bio, it says, "He who opens the door is below." It's no coincidence that the rabbit hopped through a door in this video. The latest QR code takes you to a black screen with a rabbit on it, the word patricide, and latitude and longitude coordinates that correspond to the arena in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, where Raw just so happens to be tomorrow night. Fans leaving the building on Friday night found flyers with the same coordinates and a picture of the White Rabbit on their cars. Better a White Rabbit than white bird shit. Raw tomorrow night is where we are going to get our next clue. I don't expect an actual reveal until at least Extreme Rules. Halloween falls on a Monday this year. Keep that in mind. I think it would be kind of cool if they saved it for the Halloween episode of Monday Night Raw, but I don't know how many more weeks of teases people are going to put up with before they get tired of this. Patricide. That's very interesting. Patricide is the killing of one's father. And there is an old Bray Wyatt promo, and I do mean old Bray Wyatt promo, as in 10 years old, from the early days of the character in FCW. He's got Eli Cottonwood standing behind him in this promo. Remember Eli Cottonwood? That was a classic rant on this show, back when they gave out all the new NXT names and I went through them one by one. Percy Watson, Lucky Cannon, Husky Harris was another one. That one wasn't too bad compared to the others. But oh my God, Eli Cottonwood. Remember the mustache promo on the old NXT show? "I don't have a mustache, but a mustache is for a real man." He says, "I don't have a mustache." Meanwhile, I'm pretty sure he did have a mustache. He says, "None of these guys have has a mustache like mine." Yeah, he did say that. So why the fuck did he say he doesn't have a mustache? "I have the best mustache of anyone here." This was a real television segment, by the way. I can't imagine why he didn't go on to fame and fortune. Maybe he became a professional mustache groomer and he runs his own salon somewhere. But anyway, Bray told the story in this promo of his daddy being the captain of his own shrimp boat and what a mean old man his daddy was. One day, his daddy's boat caught fire and sank with him in it. And Bray had to go away for a little while after that. He said this while holding up a lighter. So he admitted to killing his father. Patricide. It all ties together. I love this kind of stuff. I love this kind of viral marketing that they're doing. It's what hooked me into the first Cloverfield movie when it came out, even though the viral marketing for that movie ended up having nothing to do with the film. But WWE has had discussions with Bray recently about a possible return. There's been no word on how those discussions have gone. But it seems pretty clear to me, based on all these videos and everything they've been doing, that those discussions probably went pretty well. If Bray Wyatt is coming back to wrestling, it's only going to be for one place. He's not going to AEW. He's not going overseas. He's not going to MLW. He's not going anywhere but WWE. And I'm sure that Jefferson Airplane's song was not cheap to license. They're not going to do that for just anybody. I mean, there was a character on the show as part of the Firefly Funhouse called Ramblin' Rabbit. And no matter how many times he tried to kill that fucking thing, he would always come back. Now, I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole, no pun intended, and try to figure out what every little thing means. I'll leave that to the social media detectives. Everyone picking apart every little thing. I mean, you know, these ARG games are meant to throw you off every bit as much as they're meant to guide you. So you can spend hours, like literally hours and days, trying to figure out what every little thing means. And it may all just end up being a waste of time. But there are some pretty obvious tie-ins here, and there's lots of possibilities. What about Alexa Bliss? Will Alexa Bliss be involved in some way? She was the last time we saw Bray. She's still walking around with Lily the doll. She threw out that 10 feet tall line in her promo with Bayley on Raw Monday night, which is part of the lyrics to the White Rabbit song. Braun Strowman just returned, a former member of the Wyatt family. Also someone who's gone to war with Bray Wyatt and The Fiend. Does the timing of his return have anything to do with all of this? I like these angles that make you think. It keeps you engaged in the show. It gives you more of a reason to watch. I hope he changes things up and doesn't just come back under one of his old personas like he never left. I would think that Bray would want to change things up a little bit. I don't think he's somebody who would be content to just go back to the exact same thing he was doing before. I saw there was training footage of him in a gym somewhere that leaked. We don't know how old that footage is. It could be new, it could be old. I didn't need to see that to know that Bray Wyatt is coming back. It's pretty obvious this is all set up for him. It's only a matter of when, not if. I didn't get to do a Raw review on Monday night, so just a few thoughts and observations from the show. We had back-to-back good matches to open Raw on Monday night, both with distraction finishes, though. First, with Bobby Lashley beating Seth Rollins to retain the U.S. title off of a distraction from Matt Riddle. And then again with Kevin Owens beating Austin Theory off a distraction from Johnny Gargano, holding up Theory's Money in the Bank briefcase outside the ring. There was a backstage segment with the Alpha Academy and Johnny Gargano. Kevin Owens walked up, coming off of his win over Theory, and he said, "Johnny had my back out there, so now I'm going to have his." And Gable issued a challenge to both of them for a match on Raw tomorrow night, which he, at the time, did not realize happens to be in KO's home country of Canada. They're going to be in Edmonton tomorrow night. So tomorrow, we're going to get a Panda Express reunion. Years ago, in the AIW promotion, Absolute Intense Wrestling, Gargano and Steen were a tag team called Panda Express. True story, Kevin Steen was going on his first European tour. He was going to Germany, and he did not want to go. He didn't speak the language. He didn't know anybody there. But then he found out that Johnny Gargano was going to be on the same tour. And he had seen Gargano once or twice, so he kind of knew of him, so he went. And then he realized that Johnny liked pandas, just like he does, and they became best friends. Other guys were probably out carousing and drinking and trying to fuck anything that moved, watching German porn or whatever wrestlers do over there when they visit Germany. These two, though, they stayed up in the hotel lobby until 5 in the morning watching panda videos on their phones. Hence, the Panda Express was born. Now, I doubt the WWE would actually call them that or else they would get sued. I think they should reach out to the Panda Express people to get the restaurant as a sponsor. I think they can make money off this. Great orange chicken, by the way, if you've never eaten at a Panda Express before. I know it's fast food Chinese, but it's very good. Anyway, Panda Express on Raw tomorrow night. This will have to do until we get DIY back together. And until the bloodline turns on Sami Zayn and we get the reunion with KO. The Judgment Day picked up a win over Riddle and Rey Mysterio after Seth Rollins got involved and went after Riddle as payback for Riddle killing his chances of winning the U.S. title at the beginning of the night. There is still nothing at all interesting about Dominic as a heel so far, but he is getting pretty good heat so far without doing much of anything. In the back later, Riddle and Rollins had to be separated, and Rollins agreed to wrestle Riddle whenever and wherever he wanted it. He didn't have any interest before in a rematch. Now he has changed his tune. You want a rematch, you got one. And Riddle said, "Extreme rules in a fight pit match." Like I said earlier, it wasn't even a week before this when I was on that NXT Year in Review roundtable, and I said, one thing I would love to see Triple H bring back in this next year is the fight pit match. I don't care if it's NXT. I don't care if it's the main roster. Bring back the fight pit. 5 days later, we're getting another fight pit match. Our first one in probably a year and a half, I would think. Maybe even longer. It's been at least a year and a half. Since we have seen one of these matches. I think the last one they did in NXT was Timothy Thatcher against Tommaso Ciampa. And they've only done two of them. The first one, they brought in Kurt Angle as the special referee. It was Thatcher against Riddle. Thatcher was in both matches, and he won them both. But I love it. You know, for those who don't know what a fight pit is, it is kind of similar to the old Lion's Den match that WWE created for Ken Shamrock when he came into the company. They were both inspired by MMA. With the fight pit, they retrofit the ring with this special cage. There's no top on it, but there is a ledge or a platform on top that they can brawl on, or they could throw the other guy off of it into the ring. They could jump off of it. They take down the ropes. The only ways to win are by forcing your opponents to either tap out or by knocking them out. There are no pinfalls. It's the perfect stipulation to blow off a feud like this. And since Roman Reigns isn't wrestling on the show, I'm sure they're going to headline the pay-per-view with this, especially if they need time to take the ropes down and set the cage up. You know, they're not going to take the time to do that and then have another match after. So this is tailor-made for a Matt Riddle win, especially since Rollins won the last match, and since we know they're doing War Games at Survivor Series this year, probably with the Bloodline involved, and they're not going to be doing a singles match with Roman Reigns. That pretty much eliminates the possibility of there being a Reigns and Rollins match. If they were going to be doing a match with Rollins and Reigns, then you can't have Rollins lose here. But if they're not putting him in a championship match anytime soon, then Rollins can lose. They had Kurt Angle officiate the very first one. Triple H, I think, should put aside whatever issue they have with Ken Shamrock, and they should pick up the phone to call and ask him to be the guest referee for the Fight Pit match at Extreme Rules. They did not even have tap outs in this company until Ken Shamrock debuted in 1997. And then all of a sudden, everybody was tapping out. Before, it was the verbal submission. Only after Shamrock came in and introduced the whole concept to this company did we get the whole tapping out thing. That's part of his legacy in this company. It would be very appropriate to finally bring Shamrock back for this, and then maybe induct him next year into the Hall of Fame. We got a tease backstage of a potential match down the road with AJ Styles and Finn Balor. The Judgment Day were about to go out, hit the town. They were going to celebrate their big victory when Balor spotted AJ Styles on his phone. So he went over to say hello, and AJ wanted no part of it. He wanted no part of him. He wanted no part of the Judgment Day. Finn hugged him anyway and acted all chummy. But they're obviously building to something between them, which is great. It's been too long since we've seen Balor and Styles in the ring one-on-one. I know Anderson and Gallows' contracts with Impact just expired a few weeks ago, so there may be speculation on Triple H, maybe bringing them back and getting the club back together to take on the Judgment Day. But they may not be gone from Impact for good. They're working a tour right now for New Japan. I know Carl Anderson is the never openweight champion. If they go back to WWE, they could kiss New Japan goodbye. You know, and they already did that once, and they got burned. In fact, I think it was by Triple H. I think Triple H is the one who talked them into signing those five-year contracts, which WWE ended up releasing them from 6 months later. 6 months, 8 months, whatever it was. They don't need the club. They don't need Anderson and Gallows. I have no desire to see them back in WWE. If they want to do a six-man tag team deal, they can wait for Edge to come back, and they can do Edge, Rey, and AJ Styles against Balor, Priest, and Dominic. That would be the way to go. Closing out the show on Monday with Bayley against Alexa Bliss was a very odd choice, because in no way did that feel like a main event. Not with the way they've been booking Alexa Bliss ever since. I don't know what it is. There's something missing with her. And I don't even know if it's her fault. Just the way that she's being presented and booked and used on television. It's like we've got half of Alexa Bliss back, not the full Alexa Bliss. I can't quite, you know, tell you what it is, but there's something off here. But the way that she's been booked, it's going to take some rehab before you can convince me that she belongs in main events on Monday Night Raw. And it was another distraction finish with Dakota Kai distracting the referee while Io Sky shoved Bliss off the top rope and into a rose plant to give the win to Damage Control. That's too many distraction finishes on one show. Vince McMahon would be very proud of his son-in-law this week. He would be. But he was distracted. Probably by a blonde in a short skirt. The October 10th episode of Raw is coming to the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. They are promoting a D-Generation X 25-year celebration for the show. They're reuniting all of the living members, except for Billy Gunn, who they don't have access to. They can celebrate by presenting all the members maybe with their AARP cards on the show. Billy looks great. Billy don't need no AARP card, even though he's of age. Billy Gunn is 58 years old, I believe. I believe Billy Gunn is 58 years old, almost 60, and looks the way that he looks. He's the one they can't get for this show. But I think back to DX and, you know, look, my favorite incarnation of DX was the Triple H-led version of DX. When Shawn Michaels lost at WrestleMania 14 and went off to go, you know, heal up his back and left television, and Triple H came out on Raw the next night and said, "You look to your blood." And he introduced X-Pac, and by the end of the night, the New Age Outlaws had joined them, and you had Triple H and Chyna and X-Pac and Road Dogg and Billy. In 98, that was my personal favorite version, I think the best version, of D-Generation X. But it's been 25 years. A lot of 25-year anniversaries this year. We have the 25-year anniversary of the very first Hell in a Cell match in a few weeks. I'm going to be doing a live watch-along on the YouTube channel for it. Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, one of the greatest matches in WWE history. With the greatest debut of a new character in WWE history. And of course, I mentioned Montreal earlier. Get ready to hear about that in November, the 25-year anniversary of the Montreal Screwjob. It's coming. We'll probably do a watch-along for that, too. Over on SmackDown, just a few thoughts. I could not say enough good things on the stream on Friday night about the opening segment to that SmackDown show. That was among the best opening segments on any WWE show all year. Maybe the best. That might be the segment of the year. And it's not as if the Bloodline did anything different. It's not as if it was action-packed. You know, I like opening with a hot match as much as anybody. But they're telling such a great story here with the Bloodline and Sami Zayn coming out. He was still wearing the OG Bloodline shirt while everybody else had the new shirt. And by the end of the segment, Roman Reigns is looking at Sami and telling him, "Take that shirt off." And the look on Sami Zayn's face, it was so sad. And everybody said, "Oh my God, it's about to happen. It's about to go down. Sami Zayn is about to get booted out of the Bloodline." And they wanted you to believe that. And I thought to myself, I'm going to go off. I'm going to pop off on the stream tonight if they kill this storyline now, instead of waiting at least for War Games. And then we got the little twist at the end. We got the swerve where Roman said, "I want you to take that shirt off." And Jay ripped it off his body. Jay Uso was great here. And Roman says, "You're never going to wear that shirt again because I got you a new one." And he throws him the shirt and Sami opens it up. And it says SZ for Sami Zayn, Honorary Uso. And everybody cheered. And Roman had this big cheesy smile on his face. Jimmy was smiling, Solo Sikoa, Paul Heyman. The only one not smiling was Jey Uso. And Sami was on cloud nine and he hugged Roman. And I mean, just everything about this segment, the visceral disdain that Jey Uso has every time they get a close-up of his face for Sami Zayn is just fucking great. This is my favorite thing in all of wrestling right now, regardless of the promotion. This right here, this storyline, is my favorite thing in all of wrestling. And again, if they're not building to something, a Sami mistake or something in War Games, then I don't even know what we're doing here. There was a segment on the show with Drew McIntyre and Karrion Kross, where McIntyre challenged him to a strap match at Extreme Rules. Scarlett came out for the distraction. Kross tried to sneak up on him from behind. This all was to lead to a fireball spot. And fireballs are as old as the wrestling business. I mean, the fireball spot, I mean, it has to go back at least to the 60s. And they did it all the time in Memphis in the 70s and throughout the 80s and even into the 90s and stuff. So a well-placed fireball has been, you know, a good gimmick in the past. But there are other times when you use the flash paper, if you don't know what you're doing, it doesn't end well. And it didn't end well here. Scarlett was to throw a fireball in Drew McIntyre's face. And she did throw a fireball, but it didn't exactly look like it hit Drew McIntyre in the face. She is no wizard. Let's put it that way. She is no wizard like Chris Jericho. So what ended up happening is he didn't sell it for very long. Cross hit the ropes. Drew caught him coming off the ropes and hit a spinebuster. So you just did a fireball spot on the babyface, and the babyface immediately came back and took down the heel, which rendered the fireball spot completely useless. Now, they could have sold it like he was blinded by it. You know, the flash of light, it blinded him. I don't know why they had him give Cross a spinebuster, but that's what he did. And Cross ended up coming back and, you know, taking down McIntyre. He went to go leave the ring. And you could hear someone, I think they were banging on the mat, like the cameraman or a referee, was telling Cross. Cross got the cue to get back in the ring and keep the segment going. They had a call an audible. So he got back in the ring and he ended up putting him in the cross jacket and he was yelling at him. I don't blame these two guys. I mean, they tried to make the best of a bad situation. They got to the destination that they intended to when it was over, which was Cross putting down Drew McIntyre. But let's keep the fireballs away for a while. Let's keep, and that goes for AEW too. We don't need fireballs. We can put them on the back burner for a while. Main event was the Usos retaining their tag team titles over the Brawling Brutes, Ridge Holland and Pete Dunne. Very good match. 434 days as of today and counting for the Usos as the tag team champions. They're inching closer to Demolition and The New Day for the longest reigning tag team champions in WWE history. And they show Demolition on screen. They acknowledge them. Same with The New Day in the video package on Friday. And I said it then, if Triple H finally puts Demolition in the Hall of Fame next year, between that and the War Games stuff, he gets my vote for Booker of the Year, hands down. I don't care what else he does. He gets my vote for Booker of the Year. There were no announcements this week on the status of CM Punk or The Elite, but we did get a note from Wade Keller of the Pro Wrestling Torch during his Grand Slam review on PWTorchVIP.com. He noted that he does not expect CM Punk to return to AEW, and while nothing is set in stone, things seem to be leaning towards a buyout of his AEW contract, which is to say, they would pay him a lump sum of part of the money he still owed on his deal if he agrees to walk away. He said, it's not 100% a sure thing, but things are pointing in that direction right now. I think it's the right move. I still say Punk needs to go. It would be a disappointing end to his comeback story, but I don't see how he can rejoin that locker room after the way things went down and the things he said and, again, how he embarrassed Tony Khan. But he is at home convalescing from tricep surgery, so with him being gone anyway for the next 6 to 9 months, Tony Khan may not be in any great rush to make a decision right away. But I was at Arthur Ashe Stadium on Wednesday. This was the other wrestling show that I was at this week. I was at Arthur Ashe, my first AEW event in a few years. I had a fun time. It was my second favorite of the three AEW shows that I've been to so far. I mean, look, I got to see Sting and the Great Muta, so I was happy, right? Possibly the last time I'll get to see Sting. And almost certainly the last time I'll ever get to see Muta. Actually, I think it was my first time, too. So that was very cool. But it was a very long night. And I'm not going to go on this long diatribe again about this, but it was a very long night that could have been alleviated by them taping at least a few matches for Rampage before Dynamite and then doing the rest after. We didn't get out of the building until 12:40 in the morning. So I knew it was going to be a long night. I didn't know it was going to be that long of a night. But they put nearly 14,000 people in the building for Grand Slam this year. That was down from 20,000 last year. But they did jack up the ticket prices, so they made more money on those 14,000 people. Their first $1 million gate for a Dynamite and one of the biggest wrestling gates ever in the United States. And you know, we could talk about how they drew fewer people than they did last year, and that's disappointing. And it is. It is disappointing. But there has never been another wrestling promotion in the U.S. outside of WWE in the last 20 years, 20 plus years, to put up the kinds of numbers that AEW has been putting up. So to put it in perspective, the largest live attendance that Impact has ever had in the 20 years they've been in existence was right around 8,000. That was for a live event in London. Ring of Honor and New Japan, they put 16,000 in Madison Square Garden for their G1 Supercard a few years ago, but that was largely due to New Japan, let's be honest. And that was a one-off. That was a one-time special, like Forbidden Door type of event. Some of the numbers are down in these markets for AEW, and that has to be a concern, but it is still very impressive to have a company not named WWE with 60 years behind it that can do 14,000 people in New York City or 15,000 people at the United Center in Chicago. John Moxley is now a 3-time AEW world champion. I guess 4 if you count his interim title win at Forbidden Door. He beat Bryan Danielson in the finals of the Tournament of Champions. I was pulling for a Danielson win. Moxley does make more sense to be the one who MJF beats. Moxley is one of the most protected names in the entire company. He lost to CM Punk at All Out, and that's one of the rare losses that he's had. It'll mean more for MJF to beat Moxley than it would Danielson, because Danielson loses a lot more than Moxley does. And after MJF wins the title, Bryan Danielson could be the first challenger. He could be first in line to challenge him for the championship. But Moxley is the ace of that place. You know, I thought this was even better than their match at Revolution. Moxley is going to defend the title against Hangman Page, who won a golden ticket battle royal on Rampage for a shot at the AEW World title. That'll be Tuesday, October 18th, the Tuesday night episode of Dynamite on October 18th. TBS is going to be airing the MLB playoffs that Wednesday, so they're being bumped back a day. There might actually be more than one Tuesday Dynamite. I know there's at least that one. That show is going to be in Moxley's hometown of Cincinnati, so he will have home field advantage. Moxley is wrestling Juice Robinson from New Japan on Dynamite this Wednesday in what they are calling a World Championship Eliminator match. The Acclaimed are the new AEW Tag Team Champions. Finally, they saved it for New York. That's why I didn't have an issue with them not doing it in Chicago. The only thing is, the match in Chicago at All Out was better than the match in New York. So if you could have taken the match in Chicago and put it together with the finish in New York, you would have had the perfect match. But they went in there against Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland, and they became the new Tag Team Champions. They got a huge reaction. Being in the building for that was very cool. Everybody was very happy. They would have been extremely disappointed. You would have killed the crowd if the Acclaimed would have gone in there and lost again. So you had to put the belts on them. And it's cool to see the championships on a homegrown AEW tag team. They didn't first get over somewhere else. They didn't get signed away from somewhere else. They built them up. They got themselves over. Max Caster rapping and Bowen sitting in the wheelchair every week when he had the knee injury, had more charisma in his pinky finger than most people do in that entire company. And he went out there and they got themselves over. Billy Gunn became part of their act somehow. Sometimes you just don't know what's going to get over and what's not. I mean, scissor me daddy ass. I mean, fuck. I mean, who the hell knew that was going to get over? But it did. And it was very cool to see them win those titles. Chris Jericho is the new Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion. He beat Claudio Castagnoli in the opening match. I missed the first 10 minutes getting into the building and getting into my seat, but I did catch the important parts of the match. And Jericho winning got a great reaction live, and I was not expecting that. It's not the move that I would have made, but as I look at it now, I have warmed to the idea of it. And I have warmed to the idea of it because I pretty much, you know, figure the reason it was done was to bring more attention and more eyeballs to the Ring of Honor brand. And I like the story they're telling too. Jericho cheated to win. And when they showed Daniel Garcia after, all the members of the JAS were celebrating with Jericho, like, you know, he just won his 8th world championship. What's not to celebrate? Daniel Garcia, who was the Ring of Honor pure champion and did not win his title by cheating, seemed very let down and very disappointed with how Jericho won. He dishonored the Ring of Honor title. This is now the next chapter in the story of Daniel Garcia eventually breaking away from Jericho's group. And he'll come to realize that this is not what I signed up for. And eventually, in the end, Chris Jericho will put Daniel Garcia over, probably for the Ring of Honor world title. But to go back to the point I was making about why, you know, the move makes sense. It makes sense because I think they're getting very close to some kind of announcement, which they have to. They have to for a Ring of Honor television show. Tony Khan was on the In the Click podcast. He said that he is optimistic about a TV show. He said, if we can get the weekly TV going again, it would be even stronger. So wherever it ends up, TV, streaming, I would love to bring Ring of Honor back on a weekly basis, and it is a conversation that I'm having with Warner Brothers Discovery pretty frequently. So that is a good sign. The fact that he is in active conversations with the Warner Discovery people is a positive sign, I would think, for getting some kind of a Ring of Honor show. Hopefully that'll happen sooner than later, because you could have Chris Jericho, you could bring back Stone Cold Steve Austin and have him as the Ring of Honor World Champion, and it wouldn't matter if you don't have television. So they need to get some kind of a TV show going here. Putting the title on Jericho, who is a bigger star than Claudio, is similar to making Chris Jericho the first AEW World Champion. And a lot of people were very upset at the time. Why would you put the title on Jericho? He's an older guy. He's a WWE guy. Put it on Hangman Page. And I said, no, that would be stupid. People don't know who Hangman Page is. Build up Hangman Page. Eventually he'll win the world title. Putting the championship on Jericho back in 2019 was exactly the right move to make. This is a similar thing, where I think they want the title on an established name like Jericho when they really are ready to try to launch this thing. So it makes sense. Toni Storm retained her AEW Interim Women's Championship in a four-way match over Britt Baker, Serena Deeb, and Athena on Wednesday, but the story came after the match was over. Jamie Hayter is back, officially back with Britt Baker, which sucks, because I figured they were finally going to be breaking these two up after a year of this. But it was all a big swerve, and so they're best friends again, Jamie Hayter back in the shadow of Britt Baker. But as they were beating down the babyfaces, they played an unfamiliar theme song that I did not recognize, and then they threw the name up on the big screen, and out walked Paige from WWE, only she is no longer Paige. She is now going by her first name, which I have been mistakenly pronouncing as Saraya, and she corrected everybody on Twitter and said it's Saraya. So Saraya made her AEW debut on Wednesday. She walked out to the ring, the heels gave her the ring, and Saraya got inside, and she did the whole this is my house thing, and she got a huge reaction. So I was in the building, and nobody knew who this was for until the name. When the name hit the screen, even before she walked out of the tunnel, the place exploded. And then when she walked out, they knew who it was. She got one of the biggest reactions of the entire show, out of anybody. So she came out, she was an instant star there. And this is a woman who has not wrestled a match in 5 years. This is a woman who has not even been on WWE television probably in 3 or 4 years. So she's had a lot of time off. She's not The Rock. She's not Stone Cold Steve Austin. But she comes out and gets that kind of reaction. That's a credit to her. Back when I thought there was still a chance that Sasha Banks might come to AEW, I thought that she could be a game changer for the women's division, because it might force Tony Khan into changing the way he books the women and how much time he devotes to them. Saraya could be that game changer that I thought Sasha could have been. She was the face of the women's revolution in WWE. Right, her and Emma, they had that match at the first TakeOver special. Whether she wrestles or not is going to have a lot to do with that, though. If she's not wrestling, then what kind of role does Tony Khan have in mind for her? If she gets back in the ring, that's where she's going to have the most impact. If she could be cutting promos on people and having big matches, and there's no shortage of people for her to work with. You know, when she came out on Wednesday, she did the belt motion with her hands on TV, so that's one sign that she's either wrestling or she's planning to. But the rumor is that she has still not been cleared to wrestle, and she's not been cleared to take bumps. In light of all the rumors, Saraya went on Twitter and said, "Ignore the dirt sheet clickbait. See you on Wednesday." And they are promoting that she will be on Dynamite this Wednesday. They have not said what it is that she will be doing, but obviously we'll get the promo explaining why and how she came to AEW. WWE are the ones who let her contract expire in July. Paige was still employed. Some people were shocked to find out that Paige was still under contract to WWE for all these years because she hasn't wrestled in so long. She was under contract with them, and they allowed her contract to expire in July. She did not want to leave. It was not her choice. But that's how her career there came to an end. She has a history of neck issues. She has scoliosis. She was told 5 years ago that she has the spinal cord of a person that was in a severe car crash. A doctor comes over to you and tells you, hey, you got the spinal cord of somebody who was in a severe car crash. You can understand why WWE would not clear her to wrestle in one of their rings. She has not wrestled a match since. She was the SmackDown general manager for a while. She managed the Kabuki Warriors until she had to leave to go get a follow-up neck surgery. She, at one point, claims that she offered to be a mouthpiece for Ronda Rousey, but they didn't go for it. She was always trying to come up with things that she could be doing on the show. It is very clear, based on her past statements, and just common sense, that she wants to get back in the ring and wrestle again. Now, it'll be interesting to find out exactly what went into her decision to go to AEW, because she did make a funny remark on one of her Twitch streams back in July. Somebody said, "Would you go to AEW?" And she laughed and said, "Sure, if they'll pay me enough." But Triple H made an off-color remark about her years ago on a media call, when he was talking about the possibility of Edge and Paige possibly one day returning to the ring. He said, "I would love to see them step back into the ring and compete. More importantly than that, though, I would like to see them live long, healthy lives. You know, Edge has kids. Paige, maybe, she probably has some that she doesn't know of." And Paige wasn't very happy about that. And he got a lot of blowback and a lot of backlash for making that comment. So I don't know where things stand as far as Paige and Triple H are concerned, because now Triple H is the one running the show. Did that factor into her decision in coming back, in wanting to go to AEW instead of trying to work something out with WWE? Because the belief is that WWE wanted her back. Now that Triple H has taken over, overtures may have been made to her. They wanted to try to bring her back into the fold. And she ended up going to AEW anyway. And I just wonder how much of that. It's possible that to her it's all water under the bridge, not a big deal. You know, he apologized for it. I don't know if he did or not. But how much of that may have played into her decision to not go there, but to go to AEW? But I said this a few months ago. If her doctors say that she can do it safely, or if the AEW doctor examines her and tests and says, "You know what? We think that you can safely get back in the ring," then she should have the same opportunity that people like Edge and Bryan Danielson have had to come back and wrestle. WWE thought that it was serious enough that they would not even let her take bumps for all those years. So that's a concern. But if a doctor examines her and says, "I think it is safe for you, maybe with some limitations, to come back and wrestle," then she should be able to, even if only on a part-time basis. I don't expect to see Paige back in the ring wrestling on television every single week, even if it was only on a part-time limited basis. Britt Baker, Jamie Hayter, Toni Storm, Athena, Serena Deeb, Ruby Soho, you know, she's got plenty of names to work with. All people that she's never stepped in the ring with before. They would all be fresh opponents. But you saw on Wednesday night with that reaction, this woman is already an instant star for Tony Khan. But like a lot of other ex-WWE stars that he has brought in, it's up to him to make sure that she doesn't become just another face in the crowd. Now on Rampage, which they taped on Wednesday, I only went back and watched parts of the televised version. I didn't see the entire thing. But I did go back and watch the opening match, which was a lot of fun live in the building, except for one moment in particular. And then one bump I actually missed most of, but it was Sting and Darby Allin against Brody King and Buddy Matthews. No disqualification, and it was a wild match. There was one point where two tables were set up outside the ring. Sting was climbing up to the top rope, and Brody King came up from behind him and shoved him off, and Sting crashed through one of the tables, but he smashed his head on the second table. And when he came up, he had a gash on his head. He was bleeding. That was very scary. When I saw his head hit the edge of the second table, it was very, very scary. But aside from the cut, he seemed okay. He was able to finish out the match. And, you know, at the end of it, he was smiling and everything. He even cut a promo backstage when the match was over. But this all built to a surprise cameo. Now, Tony Khan coming into the show said that he had a few things up his sleeve. Paige debuting was one of them. This was the other that he was referring to. Sting was in trouble. He was handcuffed to a chair. Buddy Matthews was about to take a baseball bat to his head. The lights go out, and when they come back on, the great Muta comes down to the ring, mask and all. He gets into the ring, and at first he teases that he might go after Sting, because he and Sting have history together. Sting and Muta feuded over the NWA television title back in 89. They had a match. It might have been at Starrcade that year. They had a match. There was a tag team, Electrified cage match where they were on opposite sides. They wrestled each other and they teamed together back in New Japan. They teamed together for the last time in 2004 at an independent show. So a lot of history between these two. Is Muda here to attack Sting? And then, of course, he turns around to face Buddy Matthews, who comes at him and Muda takes him down. He spits the green mist in his eyes. And this was the spot that I missed. And this is what I had to go back and watch on TV. This was brutal. So Matthews is misted in the face. He's blinded. He can't see. He kind of goes backwards. And he bumps Julia Hart, his own manager, off the apron. And there was another table that was set up on the floor outside. The idea was he would bump her and she would take a table bump. The problem is that she went back so far, she overshot the table and smashed her head on the concrete floor. She didn't even hit the mat. She hit the concrete exposed portion of the floor. And obviously this table was gimmicked to hell because she barely touched it. And yet her ass on the way down took a chunk out of the table. Now, Julia Hart, she's not that big, okay? Julia, I don't know what she weighs, but she doesn't weigh that much. She certainly doesn't weigh enough for her ass to take a chunk out of the table. It looked like Jaws took a bite out of the table. But the majority of her body took the brunt of the blow on the concrete floor. And I didn't see that live. I must have missed that. But I watched it back, and holy shit, she's lucky that she got off injury-free. She seems to be okay. I don't think she's concussed. But man, that was a scary, scary bump. But in the end, Sting gets the win thanks to the assist from Muda, and they embrace when the match is over, and it was just one of those great, unexpected moments. And since then, we have learned Pro Wrestling Noah, which Muda is part of. I think Muda's the president, I believe, of the company. Pro Wrestling Noah announced on Saturday morning that Sting is going to be coming to Japan. He is going to be coming over to Yokohama on January 22nd, 2023, for an event that they are dubbing the Great Muta Final Bye-Bye. This is the retirement of the Great Muta character on January 22nd, and it sounds like, just based on the announcement they put out here, Sting is not just going to be there, but he's going to be tagging with him. He's going to be wrestling. This is what the announcement said. It was the Great Muta who came to the unexpected rescue of Sting on AEW Rampage Grand Slam this week. This incident triggered him to partner with Sting at the Yokohama Arena event. So how about that? Sting and Muta in Muta's retirement match are going to be tag team partners. That's very cool. However, February 21st is the actual retirement of Keiji Muto. So they're doing a retirement match, a retirement show for him at the Tokyo Dome. They're going big with this. Usually you hear about New Japan running the Tokyo Dome. Pro Wrestling Noah is going to run the Tokyo Dome on February 21st for a Keiji Muto retirement match. So I guess they're doing the Muta retirement in January and they're doing his actual final match in February. So anyway, that's the plan there. And again, very cool for me to be able to see Muta live. I'm trying to think back if I ever saw him live. I don't think I ever did. But this is the last time I'll ever be able to do that. So to see him and Sting in the ring together like that after their history was very cool. Last week, I mentioned Malakai Black's comments in the ring after his match for Prestige Wrestling, where he told the audience that he would answer their questions in due time about his status. But for the first time in the last 22 years, he was going to take a step back, and he was going to recalibrate his life, and he asked for a few months to do so. "This is not goodbye," he said, "rather, we'll see each other soon." That doesn't sound like a man who is retiring from the ring, but someone who's looking to take some time away to get his head on right. This is after the reports of him getting a conditional release came out from AEW. Not from AEW, but that he got his conditional release from the company. After the sound off dropped last Sunday, and isn't that when news does tend to break, he issued a statement on social media regarding his status, and I want to read it to you now. "Firstly, thank you for all of your messages. Know that they are being read and appreciated. With all of the turmoil going on in the landscape of professional wrestling, I took the time to think about my words, but also needed to wait until conversations between mine and AEW's camp had come to a conclusion. Firstly, I dislike reading parts of my private conversations between myself and AEW in regards to my mental well-being on the internet. These conversations were private and were not meant to be shared with the public. As by now, most people realize I am a very private person and do not feel the need to have stuff like this out on the internet. If you've been following me longer than a cup of coffee, you're aware that I have spoken about them prior, but would like to be the one deciding on when this finds its way to the public and not through someone else's mouth, as with anything, through the lips of someone else. The story gets distorted. Secondly, to be in line with the above, they also need context. I did indeed ask for my release. The last 2 years of my life have lended to a lot of setbacks. Both me and my wife have been affected by uncontrollable actions from the outside that resulted in loss of life, medical setbacks, career jeopardizing, the suicide of a close friend, and a close family member almost losing their life, then experiencing an injury that I was sure was going to be the end of my career. I spent every week going through several sessions of rehab, dry needling, and therapy just to be able to walk and compete. Now, this being the tip of the iceberg, and with the combination of the promises in my professional field that were not upheld, which resulted as a combination of all of these to a complete demoralization of life and career. This decision had been in my mind for the past 6 months. It's hard to really put a finger on it and say this was the moment that it all went wrong, but I can tell you after many years that I have learned from a rational point of view to see when I need to hit the brakes. Which is what this is. Perhaps once my mind settles on certain things and processes the last 2 years a bit better, I will convey via a different platform than this written out what the exacts were that happened and have a more informed conversation about them. For now, know that I am good. I am taking, for the first time in 22 years, a few months to recalibrate the last 2 decades of my life. Lastly, I have read a few narratives online in regards to my release, mental health, and my personal life that I can summarize swiftly. If it didn't come from me, it didn't happen. Stuff about conditional releases, stuff in my marriage, or using said mental health to leverage the other when I, as I said before, that part wasn't even going to be part of the public conversation, are false. My marriage is fine. I am fine. It's just time to make sure those things stay that way. Once again, I appreciate your support, and we will see each other soon enough. So he confirms that he did ask for his release from AEW. He's also not very happy that somebody in the company leaked the details of what he thought were private conversations that he was having with Tony Khan, and possibly others in the company. I know some people will point out how tight-lipped that locker room was when Brody Lee was sick. Nobody said a word. I mean, nothing got out about how bad things were with him. And that's like unheard of, that nothing leaks, you know, behind the scenes in a promotion. I mean, that's, I don't even know when that happens. But with Brody Lee, they kept a very tight lid on things. But you got to remember something. That was a very different locker room than the one they have today. They have a much bigger roster now. A lot of people from the outside that they brought in. They also had Brody Lee's wife directly, you know, ask the roster, please do not say anything. And so they, you know, they basically did what they felt that she wanted. They gave her what she wanted. They didn't say anything. So that was a very different situation. Because otherwise, this is wrestling, and you have to assume that things are going to get leaked. They always do. I know the line about promises that were made in his professional field that were not upheld, that's going to get a lot of play. It already is. It's going to get a lot of people talking. He has been gone from WWE now for well over a year, but he did mention processing the last 2 years of his life. So it is very likely that he was at least partially referring to how his WWE run came to an end. He admitted that the driving force, he has said the driving force behind Zelina Vega going back to WWE last year was because he was still working there. She re-signed with the company in May of last year, and the very next month, right after he had re-debuted on SmackDown, like a week or two later, they released him. In the history of shitty moves that company has made, that was a pretty shitty one. They got her to re-sign so she could be on the roster with her husband, and then they fired her husband. You don't think that hasn't weighed on him? You don't think that hasn't weighed on the both of them? Of course it has. But it also wouldn't be surprising to learn that he has been unhappy with his position in AEW as well. Because I've been unhappy with his position in AEW. I can't imagine that he wouldn't be unhappy with the way that he's been used. He also cited a lot of other personal issues, death and illness, as reasons for why he asked for his release. It's a combination of a lot of things. It's not any one thing. Dave Meltzer says that Black is one of the people that WWE reached out to, even though they knew he was signed to a 5-year contract. This goes back to the allegations of contract tampering. When he talks about promises not being kept, that line sounds like a shot at AEW, though. And that's not good. I would love to know what those promises were, because depending on what they were, he may well be within his right to want to leave if he feels that he was lied to. If he was promised something and Tony Khan didn't live up to it or reneged on it, then, you know, he's got a case. I don't know about legally, but, you know, just morally, he's got a case. Apparently, Black was not the only AEW star to ask for their release, although Meltzer didn't say who the others were. He just said there were others. Fightful reports that the other names that were contacted by WWE about possibly coming back to the company were Swerve Strickland, which was the first name I said when I talked about the story after it broke. I said I was sure Triple H reached out to Swerve when he was bringing Hit Row back to SmackDown. Hey, we're getting the band back together. You want to come back? So Swerve Strickland was one person that was reached out to. FTR was the other. FTR leaving was the best decision that they ever could have made before Vince McMahon turned them into a pair of fucking Ninja Turtles. They got the hell out of that company. Remember that? Remember those outfits they were pitched about wearing? Best career move they could have made was leaving that company. Now Triple H is in charge, and Triple H did well by FTR when they were in NXT. I think if they went back to WWE now, they would be treated a lot differently. But they also would not have the freedom to work other promotions. They wouldn't be able to work AAA. They wouldn't be able to work New Japan. They wouldn't be able to collect all those belts. But I could definitely see FTR back in WWE one day. And I would not have said that if Vince McMahon was still running creative. It sounds like WWE was blatantly tampering with their talent without a care in the world. I mean, it's no wonder Tony went off on them. Fightful also said while they don't have a name, an AEW source told them that WWE reached out in August to an AEW name who had been with the company since day one, but that even they would be surprised to learn who that person was. So they've piqued my curiosity with that. MJF wouldn't be surprising. Maybe Wardlow? You know, I think WWE would love to have Wardlow. I could see them reaching out to find out when his contract was up. But that's not the only news with regard to the House of Black, which seems to be falling apart. It's less of a house now. It's more of a kind of a rental with Brody King and Julia Hart being potentially the only members left. Because as I was getting ready to record today's show, there is breaking news on Buddy Matthews. Now, I mentioned Malakai at the house show. The house show was a live event, an indie event, a few weeks ago. Cutting a promo in the ring and talking about how I'm going to be, you know, taking time away and all that. Buddy Matthews wrestled on an independent show last night for Fight Life Pro Wrestling. And he addressed the audience after the match was over. And he gave a very similar, eerily similar type of speech. He said, unfortunately, tonight I'm going to be the bearer of some unfortunate news. As everybody knows, the House of Black has had some issues lately. As all the members of the House, I speak beyond the wall. We want to thank you all for being members of the House. Unfortunately, I, like some of the other members, need to go away for a while. I need to recalibrate. I need to figure out some things. As my brother Malakai once said, this isn't goodbye. This is see you later. And he threw the mic down and he walked off. So something's going on here with the House of Black. Fightful says that it is believed, according to an AEW source, that after the New York City tapings, the Grand Slam shows this week, one source said that they believed it was Buddy's last night, but it has not yet been confirmed. Now we hear Buddy saying the things that he said at the show last night, and it makes me wonder because there's one thing that both of those guys, unlike Brody King, have in common. And the thing they have in common is the fact that they both have significant others working for WWE. So they are apart from them. They are not traveling together. They are not working for the same company. As I mentioned before, Malachi's wife is working for WWE only because she thought she was going back and she was going to be able to be with him. And then he got cut, which is not what they were expecting. And I don't think she would have gone back to the company if she knew that they were going to cut him. So it has to be weighing on them. Buddy Matthews, for those who don't know, is in a relationship with Rhea Ripley. So you have two men here whose girlfriends, wives, whatever, are working for WWE. And it just so happens that at the same time, they have to recalibrate and they have to figure things out and they have to take some time and figure out what their next move is going to be. And I wonder if that has anything to do with it. That seems to be the common bond there that those two guys share. How much of that is affecting their decision to want to step away? And if you're Tony Khan, how do you deal with that? So if somebody works for you and their girlfriend or their boyfriend, their husband, their wife happens to be working for the other side, and one day they wake up and say, you know what, I want to be with them. I'd like my release. I'd like to get out of my contract so I could go be with them. It does set a bad precedent if that's the only reason that they would have for wanting to leave. In the case of Malachi, again, he ran down all these different things. He's got a whole bunch of things, horrible things that have gone on in his life. So he's trying to figure things out. But I'm just looking at this and going, what's the one thing that these two share in common? Besides the fact that they both came from WWE. And, you know, maybe both of them want to go work for Triple H now. I don't know. But it's the fact that they have a significant other who's over there. And that's got to make things tough on a relationship. Does Tony Khan say, okay, I'll let you go, knowing full well that they're going to immediately run back to WWE? So that's the situation now that he faces with the House of Black. But it looks like the House of Black was three. They have now gone to two. And now it looks like they're going to be down to one. And Brody King is going to be the last man standing. Now, Brody King is going to be fine on his own. Brody King can do his own thing. He doesn't need to be part of a faction. He'll be okay. I don't know where that leaves Julia Hart. But the House of Black appears to be falling apart. Then there's the Bobby Fish story, which is hilarious. So Ryan Frederick is a moderator on the F4W message board. I guess he's been known to have some inside info in the past. And he claimed that Bobby Fish tried to get Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly to ask for their releases from AEW so they could go back to WWE. And both men told him no. See, Bobby Fish is smart enough. I know they say fish have tiny brains, but Bobby Fish is smart enough to realize that he won't get hired unless Triple H can bring in the other Undisputed Era guys. If he can't get the whole band back together, he ain't going to bring back just the drummer. If they go back, Fish has an automatic in. You know, without them, there is no Bobby Fish in WWE, unless they have a coaching position for him. But why would Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly leave? I mean, there are certain guys I could totally see wanting to leave who would do better under Triple H than Tony Khan. I could believe that someone like Andrade or Miro would have asked for their release from AEW and wanted to go work for, you know, a Triple H-led WWE. So there are certain people like that, but Cole and O'Reilly, I mean, they were being pushed before they got hurt. I guess Bobby Fish wasn't kidding when he said that he would go to war for Triple H. I just picture him on the battlefield, like telling Cole and O'Reilly, come on guys, let's go. And then like running through the minefield, thinking like bombs are falling all around him. He's thinking that they're right behind him. And then he turns and looks back and he sees he's all alone before taking one right in the chest. Oh, Bobby Fish. Fear not, though. Bobby Fish found his way to the Impact Zone. On Friday, he showed up in Victory Road. So that's where you can find him if you like fish. Me, I'm more of a meat and potatoes guy myself. But if you like fish, if you want to go fishing, then you can start watching Impact. NXT this week was a lame duck show, as they are all going to be until we get to the next live show on October 4th. But there were a couple of things here worth mentioning. Obviously, the big news coming out of this show was Solo Sikoa being stripped of his North American Championship by Shawn Michaels, who really the first time that we've seen him in the authority figure role on this show. I guess he takes the place now of William Regal. But Solo Sikoa, who just won the North American title just last week, beat Carmelo Hayes, who had a long run with the championship. He took it to SmackDown. He defended the title on SmackDown against Madcap Moss. So not only did he win the championship, they had a referee out there, they officiated this whole match, he declared him the winner, they let him go to SmackDown and defend the championship. But they show up here this week and Shawn Michaels says, no, no. He says that you were not in an officially scheduled match, you were not part of the fan voting, you were not one of the people that the viewers could vote on to challenge Carmelo Hayes for that championship, and so therefore this decision cannot stand and you must give back the North American Championship. He already had side plates with his name on it. So he said, okay, I get it. He goes, I said I got next. So basically, you know, I got done what I wanted to do. Here you go. Shawn Michaels shakes his hand and says good luck on Raw and SmackDown. And that was the end of Solo Sikoa on NXT. And of course, Carmelo Hayes said, oh, you know, puts his hands out like he expects Shawn to hand the belt back to him. And Shawn says, no, no. Because remember, it was him and Trick Williams, I believe, who laid out Wes Lee, who was the one who won the fan vote. And Shawn says, you tried to weasel your way out of it and it didn't work. Now you're going to have to fight for it in a ladder match that they're going to be doing at Halloween Havoc next month. But the idea that they would have put the championship on Solo Sikoa, because it created a situation where all the members of the Bloodline, except Sami Zayn, had a championship. And it made things a little interesting in that, is Sikoa going to go back and forth between NXT and the main roster? They obviously don't want to beat Sikoa anytime soon, at least not straight up, or, you know, have him get pinned by somebody in NXT if he's part of the Bloodline. If you're in the Bloodline, you're basically untouchable. Unless you're Sami Zayn, then it's okay to lose. But just the idea that they even did the title change at all, you know, they tried to at least make it make sense by having him say you weren't an official part of that match, but it was still very goofy that they didn't, you know, stop him from wrestling last week when he had the match with Hayes. They let him go to SmackDown. They let him defend the championship there, which, you know, got some more eyeballs on that North American title. Only to just undo everything they did the week before. I just thought that was a very dumb thing to do. And then in the main event, we had a match between JD McDonagh and Tyler Bate. They went in there and had a fucking great match. Not surprising, JD McDonagh gets the win. He confronts Bron Breakker, and then we get the surprise return of Ilya Dragunov, who was the former NXT United Kingdom champion, got stripped of the title. Remember, he got that big dramatic win over Walter. He was the champion. He got hurt. They stripped him of the title. It feels like it wasn't all that long ago, but you got to remember, there were months of television taped. And so even though they just crowned recently a new UK champion, it aired only recently. In reality, they had that footage in the can for a long time. But I guess him being back on the show means he's either cleared to wrestle, or they think that very shortly he'll be cleared to get back in the ring. And so we had this kind of three-way stare-down situation with Bron Breakker and JD McDonagh and Ilya Dragunov. And that was the big cliffhanger as they went off the air for NXT this week. And as I've said, you know, we'll see what this new version of NXT looks like starting October 4th. Next week is, again, it's in the can already. It's already taped. It's not going to be any different or look any different than the NXT shows have looked. October 4th is when they're live again. And that'll be officially the new version, the new look of NXT, the new Coke. And we'll get a sense of what this is going to look like. And I don't expect them to blow the whole thing up and, you know, take it back to what the black and gold used to be. But we're getting a taste of the black and gold in that we have all of these UK talents now that have migrated over to the main NXT brand. You have Ilya Dragunov now. You've got JD McDonagh. You've got Gallus. You've got Tyler Bate. You've got Mako Satomura. You've got Blair Davenport. All of these people, Pretty Deadly, all of these people that have come over that have experience. They're not rookies. They're not developmental talents. They can go. You put them in the ring 10, 15, 20 minutes. You know you can get a great match out of them. You can have them work with the younger, less experienced talents. That's what the NXT 2.0 brand was missing for most of this year. Because they ran off people like Kyle O'Reilly and Johnny Gargano. Other people got called up. So they had Ciampa, he got called up. LA Knight, he got called up, although I kind of wish he wasn't. So you were left with a bunch of talents that didn't have the same experience. You weren't getting the same quality of wrestling match on these shows. Now with all this UK talent, I don't know when they're going to launch this whole NXT Europe thing next year, what it's going to look like. It's going to be a while. So now we have them here on this brand, and they can go out there and give you matches like the one we saw on Tuesday. That's a positive sign, I think, for the future of what this new NXT relaunch or rebranding on October 4th is going to look like. This roster is a lot stronger now than it was even just a few months ago because of the influx of UK talent. Other than that, I don't really have a lot to say about the NXT show. I did see one report that apparently at the NXT house show, I think it was this weekend, they had a new pairing. They have taken Sangha and they have paired him up with Veer as a tag team. I don't know how I feel about that. Because I was enjoying what they were doing with Sangha. He was showing more character development. He's been more of a babyface character recently. He seems very competent. You know, he's a big guy. He seems very competent enough in the ring. But we've seen a lot of character work and more talking from him. And then I saw a couple of pictures from this house show. And it was him and Veer. And again, it's just a picture. I don't know, you know, it's going to end up being on TV, how it'll translate on there. But it just kind of looked like, all right, we take these two guys, put them together, and they'll be the, you know, kind of the foreign savage team. You know, I mean, if that's what they're going to have Sangha doing, I think that's a fucking waste. I mean, they've allowed him to show more of his personality. It would suck for, you know, them to kind of take him back a few steps. But it's not like they've had anything for Veer to do. Veer was on TV a few times, and then he got yanked, and ever since Triple H took over, we've seen Veer once on television. It's like they just didn't know what to do with the guy. This could be a sign that we could have Veer put in a tag team with Sangha. But right now, it's just the one live event appearance. Let's get into some of your mailbag questions before we get out of here. Again, I gotta hit the road soon, but thesolomonster@gmail.com is the place to send any questions and comments. We'll begin here with Dylan from Taiwan. Told you, we got listeners from all over the world. This week we go to Taiwan. I was wondering if you had any opinion on a comment that Eric Bischoff recently made about Tony Khan. He was essentially about how Tony has been booking certain talents he recently signs and the writing for them. To paraphrase, he said, "I know Brian Gewirtz is not available, but there are people like Brian. But rather than hiring the next bright, shiny object that falls off the WWE tree and creating a huge surprise and getting everybody all excited, only to put them on the shelf and not see them again for 6 months, rather than doing that, find your Brian Gewirtz. As much as I enjoy the AEW product, this has been a consistent issue in the company. Do you think Tony needs more help in the writing room?" So I watched the clip that Dylan included, and Bischoff is also still on his kick that AEW has no story. So it's hard for me to take him seriously when he says stuff like that. We literally have a story ongoing right now with Chris Jericho and Daniel Garcia. Long-term booking in that company that is playing out as we speak, and I am sure is designed in the end to have Jericho put Garcia over. Should there be more stories like that? Absolutely. But to say that it's just wrestling matches without any stories, it's just demonstrably false. And I can't take him seriously when he says that. The rest of what he's saying, though, has merit. Tony Khan is responsible for all things AEW and now all things Ring of Honor. As far as anybody knows, he is writing all of this himself and he has no help. He has no writing team. I don't think he needs a writing team, but to have a right-hand man or a group of people that he can lean on for ideas to help out on the writing front, that'd be a good idea. A lot of people have gotten lost in the shuffle. We don't get to see them as much as we should. That was one of the issues I had with Malakai Black. These people don't have any stories of their own right now, or if they do, they're not very good. Tony Khan absolutely needs to outsource some of this stuff to other people before he completely burns himself out. And when you burn the candle at both ends and don't have a number two, what happens to your company then? Alvin from Fayetteville, North Carolina. "As most wrestling fans can agree that Shawn Michaels is Mr. WrestleMania and Bret Hart is Mr. Survivor Series, in your opinion, who would be Mr. Royal Rumble?" Let me stop you there. Who calls Bret Hart Mr. Survivor Series? It's the first I've ever heard of that. Randy Orton is Mr. Survivor Series. Bret Hart is Mr. SummerSlam. And Mr. Royal Rumble is either Stone Cold Steve Austin or John Cena. Austin won three of them, so it's hard to vote against him. I would go with John Cena. John Cena won two Royal Rumbles himself, one of which had a very memorable return, the one at Madison Square Garden. I was there for that one. And when I tell you that people lost their shit, people lost their shit. That was a genuine surprise that nobody saw coming. But Cena has also had memorable spots as the runner-up in a lot of other Royal Rumble matches, 2005 being one of them with Batista. It's the other matches, though, that he's had on those Rumble shows when he's not in the Rumble. That stand out to me. Last Man Standing match in 2007 with Umaga. The Triple Threat with Brock Lesnar and Seth Rollins in 2015. The match with AJ Styles in the Alamo Dome in 2017 when he won his 16th world title. Mr. Royal Rumble, I believe, is John Cena. Jacob from Reno, Nevada. Since you were at WrestleMania 28, what did you think of the Cody Big Show match and Randy Orton Kane match? I feel like they could have swapped Kane for Cody and have Orton versus Cody and Kane against Big Show. Kind of makes sense, too, because Kane got hurt when Mark Henry was on his Hall of Pain run, which started with Big Show, and Orton and Cody were feuding in late 2011. A couple of undercard matches. I don't remember them being anything special. I know, I'll say this much, the Cody-Big Show match was for the Intercontinental title, and Big Show won the IC title that night. Given how they have treated the Intercontinental Championship over the years and how few WrestleManias over the last probably 15 plus years that title has been defended at, it was nice to see the title defended. It was nice to see them treat it like a semi-big deal. When Big Show won it, he was crying or he was trying to cry, like it was such a special thing for him. So that I appreciated. But the matches themselves, it was actually really weird to see Orton and Kane. I think it was like the second match on the card, and it just felt completely insignificant. But they were just a couple of undercard matches. I mean, that's it. Not a whole lot else to say about them. We have an audio question. We haven't done one of these in a while, but we had some audio sent in from Abdulaziz, all the way from Saudi Arabia. See, so we're going this week from Taiwan. Now we're moving over to Saudi Arabia. Let's see what Abdulaziz has to say.
Hey Solo Monster, it's Abdulaziz Gamdi from Saudi Arabia. One tradition in wrestling that I see some wrestlers perform is wiping their feet on the apron before entering the ring. William Regal, Mark Henry, Claudio Castagnoli, and Adam Cole, baby, come to mind. Is there some kind of significance on why they do it? And was there heat between Lenny Poffo and Rick Rude back in the late 80s, early 90s? My guess would be because maybe Lenny Poffo got some kind of special treatment since he's Macho Man's brother. Thanks.
So we'll take the first question first. They wipe their feet as a show of respect. It's a way to show respect for your opponent. It's a way to show respect for the ring itself. Any dirt on the bottom of your feet. Yeah, it's more ceremonial than anything else. It's a respect thing. Regal did it all the time. And I noticed a lot of the NXT wrestlers started doing it also. I'm sure that's part of the influence of having Regal there when he worked there. And yes, there was heat with Lanny Poffo and Rick Rude, according to Lanny. You can't ask Rick Rude. Because Rude never thanked him when he did jobs for him. He thought it was a matter of courtesy that you thank your opponent for making you look good and putting you over. And I guess Rude never thanked him. And then again later on, when Lanny got the match with Hulk Hogan on that one episode of Saturday Night's Main Event, he said that Rude had words with him in the back when he got to the building and Rude saw him. Rude, questioned him about working with Hulk that night, figuring he only got the match because he was Macho Man's brother. And that's exactly why he got the match. And Lanny claims that he told Rude that to his face. He kind of, he kind of disarmed him by admitting, yeah, that's why I got the match. And he claims that Rude had no comeback. Now, again, that's one side of the story. We can't ask the other party because they're dead. But anyway, as Lanny Poffo tells the story, that is the root of whatever heat there may have been between the two of them. So, if you have questions of your own, from wherever you may be in the world, email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please, again, remember to include your name and where you are from when you write in. Also follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster is my handle on there. Instagram, that is at The Solomonster. And on YouTube, we just broke 71,000 subscribers this week. I feel like we just hit 70. Now we have broken 71,000 subs. Now we march to 72. If you are not already subbed to the channel, I go live after Raw Mondays, Dynamite Wednesdays, SmackDown or Rampage on Fridays. We've got pay-per-view recaps, we've got bonus content, we've got breaking news, we've got Sound Off Gamer, we've got some other stuff I've got planned. So whether you're a channel member or you're just a regular old subscriber, head over to the Solomonster Sounds Off YouTube channel and make sure you follow along there. I'm going to be back with you next Sunday. That is going to be the first Sound Off of the month of October, one of my favorite months. That will be the, what is next Sunday anyway? That is October, is it 2nd? I believe it is. Sunday, October 2nd. That'll be episode 776 of the Solomonster Sounds Off. So I hope that you will join me then. Until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week. Again, if you are celebrating the Jewish New Year, do have a very happy New Year and a rest of your September. And I will see you back here for 776 next Sunday. Until then. Take care, guys.
The Solomonster Sounds Off.
Can you imagine if Logan Paul goes to Saudi Arabia and beats Roman Reigns to become the champion? Drew McIntyre lost in Cardiff in front of 62,000 people. He goes to Cardiff, right? His countrymen, I'm going to be in the UK, and I got broken dreams back, and I got my sword, and I got my people, and I got my family, and I got my dog. After all that buildup, and he loses. And then a couple of months later, Logan fucking Paul goes in there and wins the championship. Oh my god. Now I kind of want it to happen just to see the reaction. I'd like to think Triple H is smarter than that, but we are getting Logan Paul and Roman Reigns for the championship. I'm not so sure about that.
The Solomonster Sounds Off. Each week, bursting with content. Podcasts, predictions, reviews, YouTube live streams, and more. Become a channel member for perks and follow the Solomonster on Twitter at Solomonster.
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 Solomonster sounds off.